Today on The Grave Talks, the paranormal life of L. Sidney Fisher. When L. Sidney Fisher was only 15 years old, she had a near-death experience. It's as if the experience left her with a foot in both worlds. She's a clairvoyant, and she can see dead people. The experience left her fascinated and mesmerized by the paranormal. She's a paranormal investigator and has also written several books, The Haunting of Natalie Bradford, The Devil's Board, The Celestial Series, The Haunted Series, and more. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation with L. Sidney Fisher about her books, her experiences, and her insight. You have pretty much made a career with the paranormal. You're an author and you've been writing, and I want to talk about your books in a minute, but I want to start with when you were young. What even got you interested in the paranormal?
You know, I get asked this question quite a lot, and I always tell people, I don't think that we're born believing in the paranormal. It's something that changes us, transforms us based on an experience that we have, whether it's seeing an apparition or just sensing something that doesn't seem normal. What happened to me when I lived at Lindenwood? Lindenwood is actually the house in my first debut novel, The Haunting of Natalie Bradford. So I was a living witness to that story. It was full of ghosts and the ghost of Caroline Bradford and Liz Bradford. And it just was an incredible story. But that is where I first had my first encounter with the paranormal, experiencing a ghostly presence. And it at 8 years old, you know, you really... you don't understand, you know, something is not right. And so that kind of opened a doorway for me. And I absolutely wanted to learn everything I could about the paranormal. I would go to the library in the summertime. My mom always let me go to the library during our summer breaks from school. And I would check out every book that I could on the subject. And I just became so totally engrossed in ghost stories and reading about other people's encounters. Because, you know, this is a lot of times, especially back then, you have to be really careful who you share your crazy with. I've always said that, because people that are non-believers or they've never experienced it, they like to say that you, that there's something, you know, you're off in some way, or you're delusional, or, you know, that's just not possible. So I just, you know, kept these things to myself for all these years when I was a kid, and would read about it and that kind of thing. Started writing when I was probably around 8 or 9 years old as well. Started, kept writing and doing some poetry and different things as a means of expression and that kind of thing. And it all just kind of turned into a lifelong pursuit of paranormal research. It's like it's followed me around, though, forever. So it's really, it is strange that once that doorway opens, it, for me personally, it was like there's no turning back. And at the age of 15, I was in a very bad car wreck and went over a bridge and was drowning. My car was suspended upside down and I was hanging upside down under the water, and I had a near-death experience. Traveled through the light, felt my soul leave my body. Very interesting feeling. But once I was in the light, it was unlike, there is really no words to describe how beautiful that the light was, how warm and inviting and loving. And the voice at the end of the light just told me to keep walking toward the light, because I was a little confused. But all within a blink, felt myself free. I was trapped in the car. The steering wheel had my legs pinned down, but the water washed me out the windshield. So I climbed up a 30 to 40 foot bank by taking my fingernails and digging them in the side of the red mud bank and pulling my body up until I could reach the top. So I was a bloody mess. Yeah. And I walked about a mile or so back to the lady's house where I had been babysitting a lady's children that I went to church with. And she opened the door and you know, thought she was looking at a zombie.
I can't imagine.
It was something else. But my mom, I had to get my mom to sleep with me for 2 or 3 days because I could hear the sand. And I mean, it was a traumatizing thing. And, you know, I kept telling her about my experience, and she was traumatized as well, just from seeing the vehicle. Absolutely was crushed, like completely crushed from the impact. But it was what happened after that that really, as an adult, shifted from being someone who is interested in the paranormal to someone who now, you know, they seem to follow me. It's like everywhere I go. I could not figure this out, and it took a while, but I started writing down, making some notes and things and saying, okay, here's the address I lived in here, and this house was haunted. And then here's the address here. And why do I seem to be ending up in these places where no matter what I do, I end up in a place that's haunted? How can this be happening? That's not it at all. It's not that I'm going from one haunted house to the next necessarily. It's that veil has been lifted, and I am a magnet for this, or I have a clear vision, as they say. So being a sensitive, it really doesn't matter where I go. Because if there is energy there, I'm going to feel it and I'm going to experience it. So it took a long time to figure out what was happening to me after the near-death experience. And once I came into an acceptance of it, I mean, you can either fight it or you just roll with it. And let me tell you, it's a lot easier to just roll with it. And so this seems to be, just like you said, when you and I were talking a few minutes ago, it feels like that my whole life has been, maybe that's my destiny. That's what I am to share, that there is an afterlife. But it has been, it has definitely been, seems to have been for sure, connected to the paranormal.
And having that near-death experience, you crossed the line and then you came back. Yep. That's a pretty elite club of people who have done that. And it's so interesting to me. I'm fascinated by people who've had that experience, because they all kind of describe it the same way, like you just described it, that it was beautiful. Yes. And they felt love and peace, and it wasn't frightening for them. Did you realize, you know, some people I've heard, they've said, you have to go back. Somebody's told them, you need to go back. You know, it's not time for you to be here. Did you feel that sort of thing? Or was it just suddenly you were just back?
I will tell you what happened with me. When I was standing at the beginning of the light, it was this massive, so much brighter than the sun. But not hurtful to your eyes. And I was just standing there, not necessarily moving forward, but turned around and looked into the below me and could see the car upside down in the water and my body. And the thought that came through my mind, I said, but what about my dad? What about my brother? What about my mom? You know, I'm leaving them. I really don't want to leave them. And within split second, I felt all of a sudden, I couldn't see anything. It was dark. I went from this bright light to darkness. And then my legs were free and I was floating out into the water. And all of the windows had busted in the vehicle when the car made impact, but I did not know that. But I actually, how this happened, I don't know, but I managed to float out in the, let's see, I believe it was the right side windshield. And the car, when it hit the embankment and fell over into the water upside down, it hit so hard that it rolled the odometer back 10,000 miles. And there were huge welts on my thighs from where my legs had hit the steering column. It just happened that quickly, those thoughts, and it happened that quickly. And I came out of it. But when I opened my eyes and I was trying to get to the surface of that water and I started to swim, oh my God. I mean, that's when the pain started, because I was holding my breath and I was like, if I can't get to the top quick enough, I'm going to drown anyway.
Yeah.
But there was this bright light that was shining on the top of the water, and it was the moon. It was the moon. And when I finally got to the top of the water and came up and was just gasping for air, I swear I was so confused for just a few seconds.
Oh, I bet.
I thought I was looking at the moon and I was going, oh my God, I'm dead and don't know it. And then I realized that I was in a muddy creek full of leeches and probably snakes. This happened around the first part of April. So it was warm, and it's in the south of Mississippi. So it was, it gets hot in Mississippi very early. But anyway, so I didn't want to hang around at that point and started to swim over to the embankment where there was no trees, limbs, nothing to grab onto. The only way to get out of this creek was to take my fingernails and dig them into the sides of that muddy bank and pull myself up. My fingers were bleeding, fingernails ripped all to pieces. It was a mess when I finally got to the top, and I just laid there for a few minutes and cried, and then had to listen to the coyotes in the distance. So I was going, oh my God.
And it's dark.
And it's dark. But walked back, got back there to her house, and remarkably had no broken bones or anything like that. I do have a scar on my right shoulder where a tree limb or something had cut a gash, just took a chunk of meat out. But other than that, I mean, it was just remarkable. It was just absolutely insane. And then, of course, that opened up the door for me studying about NDEs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I would assume you would become obsessed by it.
So I start researching that, of course, and I find, just like you said, that we all seem to have had a very similar. I mean, it's almost the same that people experience when they have an NDE. It totally eliminates your fear of death, because if you sum this up, that this is a glimpse, it's incredible. It's so peaceful. It was so loving. That's God. And it was incredible. So, and there was no pain. Remarkably, once you start the transition and it's so quick, and I felt my soul like lifting right up out of my body. It was felt like a vacuum. If you've ever had a fainting spell, it's similar to that, but you're But it did. It felt like a vacuum. That's what it felt like. Wow. And then all of a sudden, boom, there you are in the light. Very quick.
And you were 15 at that time.
I was 15 at that time. So I was introduced to ghosts at the age of 8. Before the NDE happened, the summer before that, I found a little boy that had drowned at a lake. It was a community lake where people would go and swim and water ski and things like that. And there were, oh my goodness, there had to be thousands of people out there that day on near the swimming area. But I was walking down the steps and there he was, and he bumped right into my knees.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. And pulled him out. And so that was traumatizing. Mm-hmm. And I had visions of him after that for about 2 weeks. And then it got better. Then within a few months, less than a year later, I'm drowning myself. Yeah, so I have had some unusual experiences, it seems like, my whole life. You know, and now, of course, I always loved writing and the arts and theater and that kind of thing from the time I was a little girl and reading. So it just seemed natural that I would write. I actually grew up loving Agatha Christie books, and I would read all of them I could get. I loved a mystery. And the ghost stories and stuff, some of them were a lot of fun to me and I loved them. And then some of them were just too real for me. Mm-hmm. So I was a little selective, you know, at a younger age, and am now too. But, you know, now depending on if I am investigating a haunting, it can really, it wears you out. It actually drains your energy. So I have to be selective of how haunted a place is for me to go. But yes.
I could see how that would, for someone like you, it would suck it out of you.
I went to a place in Tennessee this past weekend called the Thomas House Hotel. And visited there and did a ghost hunt. Oh my goodness, it's taken me 2 or 3 days to get enough sleep. It just drains you. And with me being a clairvoyant and being able to see things in my mind's eye that other people don't, sometimes ghosts want to communicate and sometimes they don't. It really just depends on them. But there was a man, from the minute I walked in the door, I saw two earthbound spirits that were there at the place. And then there was another one that came around during the ghost hunt, so later that evening.
You know, someone like you, because I definitely believe there are people that no matter where you live, it's going to be haunted. You're open to it in a different way than most people. Have you found that over the years you can kind of shut it off when you want to, or do things just come through whether you want them to or not?
I totally agree with you, but it took a long time for me to understand that I wasn't just having bad luck. Literally, I was beginning to think that I must have the worst luck of any person because I keep moving into haunted places or, it's not that at all. It's that some people are more sensitive to it. Can I shut it off sometimes? This is the way I shut it off. I tell it, I'm not messing with you tonight. I want to get some sleep. You're going to have to be quiet. And most of the time that works. There's times when, depending on what kind of energy that you're dealing with, you may be dealing with something that's non-human. If that's the case, I will tell you what I would do. I would move out. And yes, sometimes they will follow you. Sometimes they will. But if you live a pretty good life and you're not, you don't have addictions going or negative behaviors that you're doing in your life or whatever that may attract that, most of the time you can rid yourself of those things. You can burn some sage, you can say some prayers, and a lot of times the bad stuff won't bother you too much. It's the places that I've been and the people that have contacted me who have had really, really negative energy. Once I have done just an interview with them or a little investigation, almost always there's something happening. There is some sort of dramatic backstory and something that is attracting that negative energy. And so I try to help people by telling them what they can do and that kind of thing. And making sure that people understand that you're the one that's in charge. You're living, you're here, you're in a living body. They're a spirit. You need to make sure that you always maintain that you're the boss of your home. Don't live in fear, because they absolutely thrive off of fear.
That makes sense to me. Because it kind of works like that in just regular life. You have to claim your space sometimes in this world and with the paranormal world as well. I think that's really good advice. Now, at some point, your interest in the paranormal, and now it's really interesting to me to see how this all started with you. You decided to start writing. So your first book, was that the one, The Haunting of Natalie Bradford?
That was my debut novel. And the way that happened, that was a story that I had been wanting to tell for many years, for a long time. And it just so happened that I decided to sit down and write this book. And I worked with another author through a writing program. And part of that, the curriculum of the writing program, was that you had to write a book, or at least a partial manuscript. I began writing The Haunting of Natalie Bradford. I did that. That was my first debut novel. But then it turned into many other stories that I would eventually sometimes research for up to 8 months, depending on the content and that kind of thing and what I needed to do. But I spent about 6 weeks at the courthouse researching Devin Bradford's trial. In The Haunting of Natalie Bradford. And I just became so mesmerized by the entire story, by the coincidences, which I don't believe in coincidences. I think things are not necessarily accidental. But there was just an amazing amount of haunting and everything that happened to Natalie Houston, who ended up marrying Devin Bradford. And she was his operating room nurse the night that he came in and had been shot twice in the chest. And she was there and helped save his life. And then a few months later, she finds herself dating this man who is about to be on trial for killing his wife. In the 1970s, when this was going on, first of all, this man totally convinced her that he was very charming, by the way, but he totally convinced her that he was innocent, that he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. She shot him. He says his ex-wife shot him. She was shot twice too, but she was found leaned over the back of the station wagon. As if she was trying to crawl away. And she had a bullet to the left side, lower back, and one behind the left ear, I believe. I believe that was the fatal shot. But the thing is, you know, she also believed that he was going to give her this fairy tale life. This woman was a single mom. She had children. He had children. And they were all going to raise their kids just, you know, it was going to be one big happy family. He had a big house, Lindenwood, and he had built this for Liz, who had a little beauty shop downstairs. But Liz got to stepping out. Liz wanted to go over to the Rex Plaza in Tupelo, Mississippi, which was the place to be if you were anybody. And she wanted to, I think, get away from him and just have some time to herself. She had like 5 or 6 kids. So, yeah, she started waiting tables and she, you know, but the, back in that in the day, the Rex Plaza was known as the, you know, that was the party place. I mean, you had people coming down from 45 South was the main thoroughfare from Chicago to the Mississippi Gulf Coast. You had people running moonshine. You had people running all types of stuff. So in room 105 is where they would have their poker nights and they'd play till about 4 o'clock in the morning. And they had a lookout window there that they would watch for the police to make sure that the police weren't coming in to bust them or whatever, bust up the party. But this is where the murder actually occurred. She was at work that night, Liz Bradford was, and it happened right there on the front parking lot in Elvis Presley's hometown. But what happened afterward was where it got really interesting, because of Natalie Houston being a nurse and being crossing his path, crossing Devin Bradford's path. And then, of course, she ends up meeting him later, months later, and they end up, long story short, getting married. And she walks into a literal hellhole. Only way I know to describe it. And what happens, you know, just from the 3 months that she's there, it was as if the spirit of
okay, so that was me. My internet just quit.
Oh, that my was goodness. So
weird. It's weird. And I'm not even touching anything. And I see the Zoom window just go away.
Well,
in front
I'm
going to
tell you a secret. every time that I start talking about this case on a podcast, this kind of crap right here happens every
really?
Time.
And once in a while, my internet does disconnect. I've never just seen the window just disappear in front of me without me closing it. So that makes it even more interesting to me that this happens to you regularly.
Every time I talk about the haunting of Natalie Bradford, every time during the writing that book, it was crazy. I could hardly write that manuscript at night. I had to write during the daytime because I couldn't sleep at night. It's like my house would turn into a ghost bus station. I mean, there were like something was falling, creaking. It was insane. But it is always when I talk about that book. And I think it's, I don't know. I hate to say it's the ghost of Liz Bradford, or maybe it's Natalie, because most of those people in that story, they're deceased now.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with L. Sidney Fisher. In our next episode, find out more about the haunting of Natalie Bradford, her thoughts on why some ghosts can't seem to move on, and even a discussion about imposters. You can find all of her books on Amazon or other booksellers, and you can get more information on her website, lsidneyfisher.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial-free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, or you can try it for 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government, The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.